probably one of the choices the Cardinals are going to be faced with, this or that, when it comes to which defensive player they want in this year's draft. There was a really good profile on Quinnen Williams today on ESPN.com.
The beast.
And it was all done over, what was it, pancakes at an IHOP, right?
IHOP, yeah, IHOP. Or was it people a Waffle coming House? Up to him at the – it was an IHOP.
It was an IHOP, that's right, it was an IHOP.
Yeah, we asked him about his sneakers and yeah, he was a popular guy at the IHOP.
There's no. He talked about how, you know, he wandered around the Cardinals locker room and he saw Larry Fitzgerald's locker. Quote: "I was mind blown." He's visited cities he had only ever seen on screen. You know, so he's kind of overwhelmed by all this. But it also pointed out that in today's NFL, where quarterbacks are getting rid of the ball faster than ever, and routes are getting shorter and shorter because you're getting rid of the ball so soon, that a guy like Williams has a tremendous amount of value in this league, that defensive tackles like him need to continue to have a tremendous amount of value in this league because of his ability not just to plug a gap, right, not just to draw a double team, but to be able to work away from that and make plays in space, make plays in a backfield, to be more than just a traditional nose tackle at the NFL level, which is typically more of a space eater than anything else. Today's NFL almost requires a different kind of player, and Quinnen Williams is seen by a lot as that prototypical
breakout
type of player.
Breakout year, one of the best in the entire college football at what he did. It was one great year, one fantastic year. But I'm going to continue to say that if they stick with the pick and they go defense, it will not be Quinnen Williams. I'm sticking with this. I've said this all along. They will take Nick Bosa over Quinnen Williams with the number one overall pick if they don't take Kyler Murray. Now, again, I don't know if they're going to take Kyler Murray. I don't know if they're going to trade the pick. But what I do know is if the pick is a defensive player and they don't go quarterback or trade, the pick will be Bosa, not Quinnen Williams. Now, there are quite a few people that think that Quinnen Williams would be the number one pick over Bosa.
Yes, there are.
There are quite a few people that believe that. That is not going to be the case if they are on the clock and they're going to keep the pick and not take Murray. Nick Bosa is a pass rush specialist. He's an alpha male. He's a dominant player. He comes from a ball family. He is the pick at number one if they go with a defensive player. Now, if they trade down, if they do trade down and go to four and Bosa's taken at two, well, then I could see Quinnen Williams, absolutely. I could see Quinnen Williams going at that point. It's not like you don't like Quinnen Williams, but I'm just telling you, if it's a decision between Bosa and Williams, it's going to be Nick Bosa.
One coach, quote, "Quinnen Williams is the new school next generation of pass rushing defensive linemen. He's big enough to do everything that every tackle has done in history, but the difference is he's highly skilled. He is the new breed of hybrid that can do it all," close quote. But that being said, I'm glad to hear that Nick Bosa would be the pick.
It would be.
And here's Todd McShay talking about Bosa. This was on the Doug and Wolf show.
Bosa, some scouts I talked to think he's a little overrated. And I get it, I guess, because the injuries, and then he doesn't run very well. But Joey didn't run very well. He ran slower. 4.84, I think, was his time at the combine. But you just watch him on tape. These guys were born to rush the quarterback. And if you're not getting a quarterback, in my opinion, if you're going to rank positional value, the next best thing is a guy that can get after the quarterback as a pass rusher, whether it's inside or outside. And I think Bosa is just a natural in terms of knowing how to work the edges of an offensive lineman, never going at a guy full body, leverage, flat back, hand usage, all the things that you need to be elite in the NFL.
So if they stay at one, you are confidently
100%
taking out your black Sharpie and drawing a line.
Have I wavered on this at all? Ever?
No.
Wavered
nope,
on
you
it.
Haven't. I just want to make sure we're clear about this for the benefit of 6 days from now. Drawing that black Sharpie line through the name of Quinnen Williams if the Cardinals stay at number one.
Yeah. See, what's happened in the NFL is quarterbacks now get rid of the ball so quickly. So that's, you have to have these elite pass rushers to put pressure on the quarterback. You know, because these guys are getting rid of the ball, what, 2.5 seconds? A lot of these quarterbacks, man, you don't have time. It's not, you know, guys don't sit back in the pocket and go through, like, you know, it's not the old days where a quarterback, these receivers are fast, these routes are quick, these play callers are design plays with slot receivers and quick slants and get rid of the ball and keep your quarterback upright and don't let him get hit. So you're seeing a lot of quarterbacks that get rid of the ball quickly, 2.5 seconds, 2.6 seconds, 2.7 seconds. You've got to have pass rushers that can get there in that time. And that's, you know, listen, nothing against Williams, but Bosa over Williams every day that ends in Y. If we're here next week and they're not going to go quarterback or trade, Bosa over Williams.
It's funny what McShay said about Nick Bosa, the, you know, born to rush the passer, right? That story that appeared on SI.com, and if you weren't listening to us yesterday, well, first of all, you can download the podcast whenever you'd like, and you can listen to our show whenever you want if you miss it. But yesterday, we were talking about this profile story that was done on Nick Bosa, and it was done on SI.com. And a lot of it was sort of the same thing, born to rush the passer, the family that he comes from. There was a picture that was part of that story, and I think it was in Ohio State's game against Rutgers. I don't know if it was this year or the year prior. Bosa had shed his blocker and was advancing towards the quarterback, right? And in the picture, you could see the quarterback in the foreground. You could see Bosa in the background. But the focus is on Bosa, right? The quarterback is kind of blurry. You can't see him. The focus is on Bosa. You can see his face. And I was struck just by the maniacal, demonic, angry, I want to rip out your spleen and hand it to you look on his face that was captured by the photographer just in that moment. I'll show you the picture during the break. But he's
starving in your dinner.
Yeah, pretty much. Yes.
I'm a lion and you're a deer.
Yep.
You're a zebra.
And you're a zebra. And
I'm a lion and you're a zebra.
I'm coming to get you.
And I haven't eaten in a week.
I'm starving.
Yes.
I'm starving.
Yes. I have to feed my family.
And I'm ready to feast on you.
Yes. You're not getting away.
He's got this. And so if you believe – now, look, you could probably find a picture of Quinnen Williams and he has exactly the same look on his face. I don't know. I haven't seen it. I'm not saying one picture is the reason why to take Nick Bosa. But I do think that picture sort of backed up a little bit what McShay was saying about Bosa, that he just has – it's just in his nature. It's just in his blood. It's just in his – rushing the passer is just what he does. And to read that story yesterday and to read about how, you know, the different kind of training that he's going through, more flexibility-based, not, you know, trying to squat 800 pounds, right, because that might lead to more injuries – it seems like he is being trained by kind of a new age, new way of thinking about things. And I really like him. It'd be a boring pick. There's no doubt about it. Since we spent so much time talking about Kyler Murray and trading the number one pick, if they stay at number one and take Bosa, it would be boring, but it wouldn't be dumb either.
No, it would not be dumb. You know, our love-hate relationship with Pro Football Focus?
Yes.
Though they started tracking time in the pocket in 2011. And back then, only 7 starting quarterbacks held the ball for fewer than 2.5 seconds. On more than half their dropbacks. Last year, that was double, 14. 14 quarterbacks held the ball for fewer than 2.5 seconds. The speed of which the game is being played and the quarterback is getting rid of the ball, really, you know, this is why Bosa's perfect in the NFL today, because of that explosive first step and that ability to get past that blocker and get to the quarterback in that time frame. It separates him from almost everybody else in this draft. I'm not saying Williams isn't a good player, but Bosa has this unique talent in pass rushes. You said it yesterday. After quarterback, they're the most important player on your team.
Yep.
And I agree.
And somebody even said even more than left tackle.
Yeah.
Yes, I think even more than left tackle. Yep. I think elite pass rushers are...
Again, because quarterbacks are getting rid of the ball so quickly.
And if you can have multiple elite pass rushers, then you're talking about rarefied air, right?
Then offensive coordinators are dreading playing against you.
Sure, because they just...
Quarterbacks are, you know, looking over their shoulders, head on a swivel. You got to worry all the time.
So, as I mentioned, we've got the Burns and Gambo podcast. You can subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You will never miss any of the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealers. The Cardinals, not the only team checking out quarterbacks. In fact, when you start talking about teams that need quarterbacks, there's actually quite a few ahead of them on that list. That's next on the Burns and Gambo show. I'm not singing. I refuse.
Why not?
Because I did it once, and
you know what? You'll never be able to top that.
Nope.
When you sang
Can't
Holding
top.
Out for a Hero.
Can't stop.
One of my favorite movies. I put this as a top 10 movie right
now.
Wow.
Here, right? Top 10 all time?
I mean, I loved Footloose.
Footloose is not my top 10 all time.
No, huh? God, great movie.
Where all the good
Bonnie Tyler. I'll be honest with you. This is a great song to work out to.
You've said that.
If you're running, you start running a little faster. You're lifting, start lifting a little more. Yeah. Then you start, like, singing with the headphones on, and everybody's looking at you like, what the hell is that guy doing? I need a hero. Not the one you need either.
No, although, you know, it's never a bad idea either.
So we called him in New York. We didn't call him subs. We called him heroes.
Yeah,
you get a hero.
Lots of NFL teams are going into this draft looking for, maybe it's a little bit of a stretch, but they're looking for their next hero, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, I knew that's where you were going, Mitch. The last musical reference I didn't catch. This one I got.
I just
got
to see how high above all y'all's heads I can go.
Well, the last time you did this, you went way above our heads. This one, you were right in my wheelhouse, and I knocked it out of the park. Yes. Who needs a hero? USA Today labeled two teams that they consider to be in desperate need of a franchise quarterback. They're desperate for their hero, if you will. And I think they're both pretty obvious. One is the Miami Dolphins, and the second is the Washington Redskins. And what complicates this issue, if you're the Cardinals, and you're trying to figure out what you're going to do at number one, is Murray going to be the guy, and that sort of thing. If you trade Josh Rosen, you'd like to think you could trade him to both of these teams. And who knows, maybe perhaps you can. Washington's mentioned more often than Miami. Miami never gets mentioned because there's a lot of speculation around the industry that Miami's very content to wait until next year.
So wait until next year, it's a good quarterback.
Tagovailoa, Justin Herbert.
Three studs in there.
Or Jake Fromm.
Fromm's the third
Georgia,
guy, yes.
That those guys bite the Dolphins. Now, they're going to get ripped in South Beach if they do it. The fans, the media. I think the Dolphins are setting themselves up for accusations of tanking, not by the players, but by management.
Sure.
If they don't do something better than Ryan Fitzpatrick to address the quarterback position.
But it does look like you're right. Like they don't like the quarterback class now, led by, you know, with Haskins and Jones and Locke, and they're content to wait for next year where they could end up with one of those top three quarterbacks. Those three quarterbacks are very, very highly rated.
Now, Rosen conceivably could go to both of those places and be the starter today, right now. Boom, you're the guy. Go get him, right? I'm thinking if I'm Josh Rosen and I'm doing my SITV interview,
I'd love to be at one of those spots.
Sure.
Over the Giants, over the Chargers, over the Patriots. I mean, all of those teams that have, you know, Rivers and Brady and Eli, they're all going to be the quarterbacks next year. But if you go to Washington and Miami, you could literally be the starter right now. And he did say that in his Sports Illustrated piece that I just, you know, he kind of hinted that he wants that opportunity.
Sure.
To be the starting quarterback again and how invigorating it was to win those three games. It was like winning the Super Bowl, and he just wants that chance to be a part of that for a team. So I did get the indication that's part of what he was saying is like, I want to play right away.
That SITV interview, to me, I keep saying this, it just struck me like a job interview. Like he was interviewing for a job, and I could imagine him saying those things sitting across the desk from an NFL GM in like a traditional job interview type setting. Hey, you know what? Last year, it was rough, but I loved every minute of it. We won three games, but, man, everyone felt like the Super Bowl to me because winning is intoxicating, and I want to do it more. I mean, he was like sending a message to, I thought, either his current employer or prospective future employers, hey, I was not deterred by last year. I'm ready to go. I'm your guy. The other teams that USA Today identified as needing a quarterback, these are all fairly obvious, but they kind of broke them up into categories. As we mentioned, desperate need, they listed the Redskins and the Dolphins. In the succession plan needed category, again, all obvious. Chargers, Patriots, Bengals. We haven't heard a whole lot about the Bengals, have you?
No.
And quarterbacks have been real quiet with them.
Which is kind of, you know, listen, I think Andy Dalton is in that mode of the quarterbacks that we've talked about. Like, you're not going to win a Super Bowl with Andy Dalton. He's good, but he'll never be good enough to get you what you need.
Broncos are on that list, and the Giants are on that list. Funny to put the Broncos on that list since they just acquired a quarterback, but I think Joe Flacco is in exactly the same position as Eli and Dalton, and not Brady so much, but Philip Rivers too, to a lesser extent, in that the clock is ticking on how much longer they're going to be NFL quarterbacks, and you better have a plan ready just in case. Then in the next category, that's where you're going to find the Cardinals. And look, if the board falls to them, this is the category. The Vikings might want a quarterback. The Jags might want a quarterback. The Titans might want a quarterback. The Bucks might want one. The Raiders might want one. The Cardinals might want one. And of the Cardinals, they write this. They've got an exciting prospect, Josh Rosen, who weathered a tough rookie campaign already on the roster. They've got the option of picking a far more dynamic one in Murray. Our recommendation. Well, they write, the board has already fallen to GM Steve Keim. It just seems the logical course is to determine over the next few days what the best deal he can get for Rosen is, pull the trigger on the deal, and then conscript Murray and his 54 total TDs into new coach Cliff Kingsbury's air raid attack, which is virtually designed for the Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah, I mean, Miami, yes. Washington, yes. So I've reported in the past there's at least six teams interested. I don't know that Miami is, but if we're guessing at those six teams, Washington, the Giants, the Patriots, the Chargers, that's four, and there's at least two more somewhere. I mean, could it be a Miami? Could it be a Denver? Could it be a Cincinnati? Could it be in Oakland or Tampa Bay or somebody else? I mean, at one point, there was at least six teams that had interest in Rosen. The level of interest, I don't know, but some interest. I mean, I would assume Washington, the Giants, the Chargers, and the Patriots are four of those teams, and then you'd have to figure out who those other teams are and what they'd be willing to give
up.
I'm
looking through the list of the other teams, and I'll be darned if I can tell you who those teams would be. If once you get past...
I mean, it could be Denver.
Yeah.
I mean, Denver makes sense.
Could be Miami.
Yeah, I mean, they need a quarterback. If you're Miami, but that's a level of interest. You're Miami, you're like, okay, you could get Rosen for a third-round pick. Well, then, all right, then I'll get him for a third-round pick. And then if I don't like him after a year, I can still take a quarterback in the first round next year.
Yeah.
So I'll do that. So they might not be at the level of a first-round pick or a second-round pick. That's why we talk about the levels. Your interest depends on the level. First round, second round, third round. What's your level? If Miami is interested, it more than likely would be like, okay, if I could get him for a later, for a third-round pick, then I'd be interested. If I can't, then I'll just wait till next year.
I'm not saying it's going to be them, but if you're saying six teams are interested, all right, we're trying to figure out who the other two teams are, I'm not going to lie to you, Gambo, my eyes just keep going back to the Cincinnati Bengals. I mean,
wouldn't that make sense?
They're a team that I think has been severely underreported as a team that should be in the mix to get a quarterback, right?
I think so.
What the hell has Andy Dalton done to deserve any bit of a longer leash than the one he's already had? Very little.
He's 31 years old, 21 touchdowns, 11 picks last year, quarterback rating is 60. He's okay.
He's a guy.
He's a guy.
He's a guy. And if for the first time in Cincinnati, Marvin Lewis isn't there anymore, Zach Taylor is. You kind of are now starting to, okay, time to change our approach, time to change our way, try something different. If ever there were a year to give the gift of a new quarterback to your offensive-minded head coach, is this not the year? Is this not the year if you're Cincinnati, say, you know what, Andy Dalton, maybe it was good enough for Marvin Lewis, and maybe that was good enough when we were just okay, not good enough anymore. We're trying to be better. We're trying to be better offensively. I'm not saying Rosen's the logical landing spot there.
So you could play Dalton for a year or half a season?
Half a season.
Yeah, they don't have – I mean, there are other quarterbacks, are Jeff Driscoll and Brad Kaya, the kid from Miami. They don't even have, a successor.
They
don't have a successor to Dalton on the roster.
They need to be higher up on people's list when it comes to teams that should be active for quarterbacks.
I agree.
I think. They've just been underreported.
Andy Dalton's been in this – this will be his 10th year in the league.
Yeah.
10 years in the league, and what has he done? He's okay.
I have not heard much about the Bengals and quarterbacks, either in the draft or in anything. I haven't, unless I'm missing something, I haven't heard a lot of chatter about
that. You have to get to the point if you're a team with a quarterback like this, it's like, okay, I got to move on.
Yep.
Like, you're good, but you're never going to get us where we want to go. We need a better quarterback.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, Steve Keim has proven one thing throughout his time as general manager of the Arizona Cardinals. He is not afraid to pull the trigger on a deal.
Wheeler and dealer.
In fact, he's pulled the trigger on a bunch of deals. What kind of trigger is he going to pull this year? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo show. The Arizona Cardinals have 10 picks coming up in the draft. Looking for the exact numbers here. I'll find it in a second. Of those 10.
I was made for loving you, babe. Kiss. Little kiss.
Yes.
You know what? They actually had like some really good songs.
Yes, they did.
Oh, they did.
Yes, they did.
Sound really good songs.
You sound surprised by this.
No, like, they were really popular when I was in, like, elementary school. They had a, like, their songs were good.
Yeah. Here are your picks.
Yeah.
Number 1, number 33, number 65, number 103, number 139, number 174, 179, and then 3 in the 7th round, 248, 249, 254. So you've got 10 overall picks. The question is, for the purposes of this part of the show, how many picks do they end up making when it's all said and done? They're going into it with 10.
I'll say 8.
How many do they end up making, you think? 8?
I'm going to say they don't keep 10. They trade 2 of them.
What is the over-under on the number of NFL draft trades you think the Cardinals will be involved in? Obviously, you think it's going to be at least 2, right?
Yeah,
if they go from 10 to 8 picks, you think there's going to be at least 2.
History has shown that Keim is a little bit of a wheeler, a dealer, right? He's moved up. I think he's made 9 trades. 9 trades in the years that he's been here. 4 of them have been to move up. 5 of them have been to move down. So there's no history one way or the other of he tends to do this more than the other. He's done both. He's moved up. He's moved down. My favorite trade that he made, my favorite one, was the one in which he got Buda Baker. Because that was like a little strike of genius right there. He gave up 45... and then a 4th-round pick and a 6th-round pick, and then a future 4th-round pick to move up to 36, and he got a 7th-round pick, and he got Buda Baker. So that, to me, like, all right, that was a really good trade. Like, he identified a guy that he really wanted. He wasn't going to get him at 45, and he moved up from 45 to 36, and he got himself a stud player in Buda Baker. But he's traded in 5 out of his 6 years. He's traded. Now, in that draft, giving up 3 picks to get 1, right? So he gave up 45, a 4th-rounder, and a 6th-rounder to get Buda. He also got a 7th-rounder back, but he gave up a 2018 4th-rounder.
Yeah.
So a lot of times you'll do that. You could trade to move up 10, 11 spots. You'll give up, you know, your pick, and then you'll give up a 4th or a 5th or a 6th. So I could see them doing that maybe like twice in this draft so they don't end up with 10 picks. So that's why I'm saying 8. I think they'll end up with 8 picks, where they'll trade 2 of those picks away as part of a package to move up a little bit.
So if I set the over-under right now on the number of trades the Arizona Cardinals make over the entire NFL draft.
2.
If I set the over-under at 2.5.
Ooh, I'll go under.
You're going to take 2 the trades. Under on that?
2 trades. 2 trades so they don't have to have 10 picks.
Sarah, that might have to be another poll question today.
How many trades?
No, just the over-under question. If I set the over-under on the number of trades the Cardinals will make at 2.5, so you got the over or you got the under?
I'd say,
what would you bet, the over or the under? I think I'd bet the over on that. I think there's going to be 3.
Okay, so 5 drafts total he's traded.
Yep.
9 players total. So that's an average of almost 2.
Yep.
In the five years that he's made trades.
If he trades
in the first round, that sets up for maybe 3.
Sure.
I mean, you could get extreme. It could go crazy. Like,
sure.
You could go extremely crazy there.
Here's the history of his drafts, and I'll actually tell you which one my favorite trade was that he ever made. In 2013, nothing against Buda Baker. I like Buda Baker, all right? But the player that the Bears got with one of those picks was Tariq Cohen, and he's good.
Doesn't mean the Cardinals would have taken him.
No, but he's good. He's good. The pick in the moment that I like the best, and it didn't work out.
Can I guess?
Sure. But in the moment, and for the first 2 years, it worked out really well. It worked out so well.
The one in which they got Deion and John Brown?
Yes.
Oh, I got it right.
That was my favorite trade.
Deion Buchanan and John Brown.
Now, they didn't get Brandon Cooks. The Saints wanted Brandon Cooks. Brandon Cooks is real good, but Brandon Cooks obviously on his third team now. He's a very good player, but he's on his third team. The Cardinals moved down.
How many teams is John Brown on now?
From 20 to 27. Got the player they targeted all along in Deion Buchanan, who became a very productive starter for them for all those years. And then with the extra third-round pick they got John Brown, who at least under Bruce Arians was...
1,000-yard guy.
For a third-round pick, was a very productive player,
yeah.
Right? So basically two very productive players for the price of one. That, to me, is when you win a trade. That, to me, is when you say, I got two players.
Didn't they also make a move and got Marcus Golden?
They did.
Okay.
Yes, they did. That was in 2015. They moved down three spots. They got Marcus Golden. The player that the Ravens got was a tight end who didn't amount to much of anything.
Shaq Riddick?
The extra fifth rounder they got was Shaq Riddick, okay. Who didn't play for the Cardinals.
But it's worth a shot. You know, it's worth a, like, it's a flyer. You're getting the player you want, and you're picking up another pick, and you get a swing of the bat.
And we're basing all of this off of a story that's on our website at arizonasports.com, in which Kellen Olson, one of our writers, took a look at every trade that Kime has made around the NFL draft. You could argue the most productive one was when he went from 123 to 116 in the fourth round and took Rodney Gunter. Because, okay, I know.
Moved up seven spots.
Moved up seven spots. Identified a player he liked. Gunter is not a star.
He's a good player.
He's a very good, reliable, dependable, rotational piece.
I like him.
In some ways, you could argue that given what you gave up to get him, you know, to move up just a few spots, to get that player at that spot who's been as productive as he is, that was a really good trade. That was a really good trade.
Sometimes the best trades you make are just moving just a few spots, right? Three
yes.
or four spots, six or seven spots, just picking up an extra pick, getting a guy, or moving up a little bit to get a guy. I still like the Buddha trade the best. That's my favorite.
My least favorite trade was the one he made in 2017 where he traded down to 98, took Chad Williams, and with the extra fourth rounder, got Dorian Johnson. Oops.
Yeah.
Oops.
Oops.
But, and I'm not saying this to defend Steve, those are going to happen. That's the price, right? That's why I'm a big advocate on draft day of getting as many of these picks as you can, of quantity over quality, to give yourself as many at-bats possible, knowing that you're going to have a Dorian Johnson in there. Knowing that you're going to have a Chad Williams in there. Knowing that no matter how much you scout, no matter how much homework you do, no matter how good you are at your job, you're going to miss. You're going to miss.
Didn't they make a trade in which they got Andre Ellington, too?
Yes.
One of those years?
First year. The Chargers moved up to take Manti Te'o,
that's right.
The Cardinals got out of that Kevin Minter, and then a fourth rounder. They moved the fourth rounder to the Giants, and with that fourth rounder, they got Earl Watford and Andre Ellington. So out of the Chargers wanting Manti Te'o, they got Kevin Minter, Earl Watford, and Andre Ellington. Not a bad trade.
Minter was okay. Didn't make the second contract. Watford was okay. I mean, none of those guys were guys that were here long term. But they were all decent players when they were here. I mean, Andre Ellington, that first year, was like, oh my God. I mean, remember, they're going to turn a whole offense over to this guy. He was unstoppable.
I believe you declared him to be the superstar that was going to replace Larry Fitzgerald, right?
I don't know if you phrased it quite like that.
You said the offense was going to
run through Andre
Ellington, him,
yeah.
And not Larry Fitzgerald.
Well, it was. It was scheduled to. Then he got hurt. But he was electrifying that first year.
Sure.
Every time he touched the ball, it was exciting things were happening.
It's a really good story. It kind of takes you down memory lane. And when you look at the trades that Steve has made so far, you realize that there have been some very good ones. There have been some very average ones. The one thing you take away is that there have been a lot of them. And there will continue to be a lot of them.
I just think if you make all 10 picks, there's no way three of those guys are going to make this roster.
But that's fine.
Yeah.
Part of that is the attrition of missing on guys in the
draft.
But
that's where I would rather try to move up a few spots and give up. Okay, if I'm in the fifth round. Actually, they start every round. So if I want to move up three or four spots into the fourth round, I give up my fifth-round pick and I give up one of my sixth-round pick or one of my seventh-round picks to move up a couple of spots to make sure I get a guy that I really like.
I mean, look at it this way. Okay, from the sixth round on, they've got 10 picks. Half of their picks are in the sixth or the seventh round.
Three and a seventh, right?
So when you say three of them aren't going to make the team, I don't know if that's that much of a stretch to say three of them aren't going to make the team. half of their picks are coming in the very last two rounds. I mean,
right, but if you could
those
use
are
those,
all flyers. If you could use them, sure, but if you could use those to move up, but the guys that you would take there anywhere are all flyer guys. Who knows if they work
sometimes
out
or not. Sometimes teams like flyer guys.
Sometimes they do.
You know,
yeah.
Sometimes teams like taking a flyer on a guy.
Sometimes Mr. Irrelevant turns out to be something. Other times, the parade is the high point of his NFL career.
That's right.
Sometimes that happens too. Adam Jones, Greg Holland, just a couple of other great finds by the Arizona Diamondbacks. How much longer can Mike Hazen keep this up? Talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Live from the Albertsons, Desert Ridge here on the northern end of Phoenix, and we're going to be here until 6 o'clock. We're here with our friends from Woodford Reserve, a bottle engraving remote today going into the holiday weekend. Woodford Reserve is the official bourbon of the Kentucky Derby. It is the preferred bourbon of one of my very, very good friends. It's good stuff. And right now, you buy a bottle of the Woodford Reserve. You buy as many bottles as you want of the Woodford Reserve. Get it engraved for free. The engraver is here on site. Doesn't take very long at all. Graduations are coming up. Father's Day is not that far away. There's always anniversaries and special occasions coming up. Heck, you can even start your Christmas shopping if you wanted to in April, if you just wanted to sock it away somewhere. It is a great gift. People love it. I bought one for my son to give to one of his coaches back there at Coke College in Iowa. It's fantastic. So if you got a chance, stop by the Albertsons Desert Ridge. We're here until 6 o'clock. Buy a bottle of the Woodford Reserve. Get it engraved for free.
Get it engraved for free. You still got over 2 hours left to come in. The engraving's beautiful. We want you to come on down. You're going to love this gift. You get it for your friends. Get it for your family. You just get it for yourself. Woodford Reserve. It's a great bourbon. And again, the bottle engraving is absolutely free. It's really classy to get a bottle engraved. If you never had one done, come on into Desert Ridge Albertsons. Get a bottle for yourself. On sale for $29.99 for the gift set. You're going to love it.
D-backs did lose today. As we turn our attention to the Arizona Diamondbacks, fall to 10-10 on the season. They opened up their series against the Chicago Cubs today, 5-1 the final. And the story of this one was really, really simple. Kyle Hendricks pitched very well. Merrill Kelly did not pitch very well. Pretty much what that and the fact that the wind was blowing in about 35 miles per hour at Wrigley today.
Yeah, Kelly got lit up. I mean, he walked seven guys. I mean, the Diamondbacks walked nine batters today. Cook walked two. He pitched four and a third. And listen, they needed that. I mean, you know, because you're down in the game, but you know he gave up two runs, but he went four and a third, so they didn't waste any of the bullpen. But Kelly, 3 2/3 innings. It's another starter that didn't go deep in the game. Six hits and seven walks. Put 13 guys on base. Gave up three runs. Struck out five. You know, Walker had two hits today. Jones had a hit. Marte had two hits, but they just couldn't really string them together and get the run, so they lose that game to the Cubs.
Yeah, and Kyle Hendricks was very, very good. He struck out 11. He walked only two, gave up just the three hits in seven innings. It was a challenging game for both teams. It was one of those, you know, hit a ball up in the air, pop up, ends up in the stands because the wind is blowing so hard. I think I had read that the gusts were up like 30 miles per hour coming straight in from left field. So real challenging game for the Diamondbacks. But that overall does not dampen what should be kind of our cautious optimism about this team so far this year, 10-10 on the season. And when talking about this team, and when you talk about the guys who have stood out so far on this team, yeah, Peralta's having a heck of a year. Ahmed's off to a really good start. But a lot of it is kind of fueled by the newer faces. Christian Walker's off to a tremendous start. Adam Jones, obviously, has been a tremendous find. Greg Holland has been so
remarkable,
quiet and business-like in how he's approached the closer's job. It's been refreshing for it to be like so drama-free in the ninth inning, right? Compared to what we're used to with Fernando Rodney or Brad Boxberger.
I'm just amazed at how they're able to do this. I mean, it's not the traditional way where let's just get a new closer every year. You know, last year it was Brad Boxberger. The year before it was Fernando Rodney. This year it's Greg Holland. Who's it going to be next year? You know, I mean, if it's never going to be Archie Bradley, if they really value that middle reliever guy more than they value the closer, they might go that route. They might go the route where they just, you know, continue to just find a guy on the scrap heap and not pay him a lot of money. You know, we raved about the bullpen last year between Hirano, Boxberger, and Bradley. They were spending about $5.5 million on all three guys. on all three guys, like $5.5 million. They don't spend a lot of money. If you look at Holland, and he's been terrific for them, I mean, he's making like $3.25 million. And he's been lights out. He hasn't given up a run.
Sure.
I mean, and this was a guy that, like, you know, two winters ago, this was one of the best guys in baseball. You were looking at Chapman getting $86 million, and Kenley Jansen getting a lot of money, and Melanson getting a lot of money. He got $62 million, and you probably thought that Holland was going to be one of those guys. But obviously, the injury and the, you know, the torn ligament and the surgery, it derailed him from making that big money. So he's had to kind of piece it year by year to get going. It just is fascinating to me that Mike Hazen is able to find these guys that could be closers and do a pretty good job. Now, Boxberger, I thought, failed at the end last year, and a lot of people didn't like the tightrope act that Fernando Rodney had, but so far, Greg Holland has been perfect for them.
Well, say what you want about the tightrope act that Fernando Rodney walked. He, by and large, was a very effective pickup. And when I think about Mike Hazen being the guy who's making all these deals, I mean, okay, last year, probably more misses than hits. I think we would all agree with that, right? Souza missed. Gerard Dyson missed. Now, injuries obviously played a huge part in that, but they were misses last year. His first year as general manager of the Diamondbacks, Mike Hazen hit after hit after hit in terms of the acquisitions. Now, obviously, J.D. Martinez was the big one midseason, but the Yoshi Hirano signing at the beginning, it was a stroke of genius, an absolute stroke of genius. It would seem that Hazen has a real knack for finding not only closers, but guys like Adam Jones. Guys who he, you know, reasonable contracts, not very expensive, who contribute. He, last year, like I say, probably more misses than hits, but it does seem like he's got a knack for finding guys like that out in the marketplace and bringing them in for contracts that don't kill you.
Sure. And you know, a lot of it is just, you know, they wait this out. I mean, they know the market. They know that there's going to be, I mean, look, Dallas Keuchel's not signed right now, and Craig Kimbrell's not signed right now. And they wait the market out, and when everybody else has spent all their money and then that's when they pounce, right? I'm going to get Adam Jones on the cheap. I'm going to get Greg Holland on the cheap. I'm going to get Boxberger on the cheap. And he seems to do this on a regular basis, waits the market out, and then finds these guys that don't have a team and they're good players, and he gets them for low money.
Yeah. In the meantime, well, you know what? On second thought, guys, don't do it because you don't have time to do it. I'm just going to give you the breaking news right now rather than play the breaking news sounder because it's not that big of a deal.
Okay.
But there is breaking news. The Arizona Diamondbacks have just acquired Blake Swihart, the former Red Sox catcher who was placed on waivers.
Ooh.
Blake Swihart has just been acquired by the Arizona Diamondbacks. They used the Diamondbacks acquired Blake Swihart and international bonus pool money in exchange for outfielder Marcus Wilson. Swihart was a member of the Red Sox 2018 World Series Championship. He's played parts of the last five seasons for the Red Sox. Catcher, mostly catcher. Left field, right field, first base, third base, and second base. Career 274 hitter against right-handed pitchers. He, of course, Hazen's very familiar with him. Lovello's very familiar with him. There was speculation that when he was put on waivers by the Red Sox that the Diamondbacks might be interested in him. The big question was, man, you've already got four catchers. How many more do you need? You know, how many how many more catchers do you plan on putting on your 40-man roster, right?
Yeah.
Avila's on the injured list. Caleb Joseph got called up to take his spot. You've already got John Ryan Murphy. You've kind of committed to Carson Kelly in this vision of, you know, your catcher of the future. Maybe not the right now, but of your catcher of the future. Swihart is yet another catcher that you're kind of adding to the mix. You can play him in other positions, but that's a move the Diamondbacks literally just made a moment ago.
Okay, so here's the information on how they're going to use him. Right now, he is not going to catch very much, okay? He is a bat for now, just a bat. They think he can hit. positionally, they're going to have to see how it goes. But he's probably not going to catch much early. Clearly, he can do that. But right now, look for him to just be a bat off the bench, but not one of their rotational catchers. So early on, until they determine things, he's probably not going to catch much early, not be one of their main guys. They just kind of look at him right now. They think he can hit a little bit, and they'll like his bat off the bench. So that's where he fits in at that time. They might try to get him some time moving around. He could play a corner outfield and a corner infield position. Another thing to note, corner infield, corner outfield position, that's what he can do as well, so that's where he fits in.
So the Oakland Raiders went and did something a little, paranoid today. We'll tell you about it next on the Burns and Gambo Show.